understand the women. What do they want out of Trump? If they should demonstrate against Clinton, demonstrate against JFK, all of them.
They want to impeach him already.
They want to impeach him. Unbelievable.
They want to start impeachment procedures.
And who gave the heter for them? I don't understand the whole thing. I remember when Ben-Gurion went to Churchill's funeral. He walked from the hotel to the funeral service. And they showed pictures accompanied by the British Secret Service. America couldn't accompany them. They had to go. I'm sure they didn't drive. I mean, I recognize that probably an Issa de Rabbanim, but nevertheless.
You hear what Madonna said?
What? Yeah, yeah, I didn't know. What, I heard. I know. I heard she cursed.
I feel like I want to blow up the White House. She said that publicly at one of the demonstrations.
Yeah, no. I heard in the news at 5 o'clock, 5 a.m. They said she cursed the president.
No, it was worse than that.
God, I think they brought over some lefties from here to educate them what
they
to
do. They have enough. There's no shortage of lefties in America.
No shortage. Yeah, and this wired, this Yakovlevich, whatever his name is, guy is God. All right, at least what I'm teaching tonight is Shavah L'Chol Nefesh. Anyone who's a Talmud Chacham can appreciate. All right, let's begin. First of all, today is Sunday, January 22nd, 2017. We are about 48 hours into the Trump era. Should be L'mazel U'bracha. Let me say hello to the students sitting in front of me and to the many more across the wide expanse of the Jewish world. We can forget about all the Narishkeit and let's get into Torah Hashem Tamima. Last week's lecture we dealt with a very delicate question. I have to say, I don't believe there's a black and white answer. It's really one of these questions where you have to, on the spur of the moment, make a decision. What do you do if you're talking with a Baal Tshuva about Yiddishkeit and you've opened him up and you're going to tell him I have to break now, I have to go daven mincha? Delicate question. Rabbi Aaron Cutler, the source I gave you, again, if I wouldn't be a Litvak, I wouldn't understand the source. I'd be so upset. But being a Litvak, I could understand how the Rebbetzin, Rabbi Zazam Meltzer's daughter, Rabbi Aaron Cutler's Rebbetzin, peril, and she tells her husband, you have to say Kaddish for your mother. And Rabbi Aaron says, I'm too busy with klal work, I'm not obligated to go to Davin to say Kaddish. An amazing response. But you can understand where Rabbi Aaron was caught in a crossfire. It's interesting, this story came out in Hebrew. I don't know whether Art Scroll would print this in English. I don't know. And then I told you the secret. I've never revealed that story because I felt it would be misunderstood. But I'll never forget Mrs. Revel, who was an Edela, Tamimistika soul. You understand? There's one thing if you're raised in the Bronx, we were raised among Jews, more or less. You know, we always saw Machlaikis and Wise Alex and synagogues being used for many different purposes. But she was raised in Marietta, Ohio. And an emistic frumkeit. And imagine, the Kovner Rav says to Rav Dov Revel says, Ich darf sich heilen, I have to hurry up, I have got to get to Mincha time, I have Kaddish to say today. And the Kovner Rav says, you also believe in that Narishkeit? And that's, Mrs. Revel overhears the conversation and she's shaking. And she told it to me so many years later, it was real, it was like something she couldn't get over. But all right, it's a Litvisha. I know many Litvakin, there's a heta floating around, and I hope no one will take me seriously, but I don't want to tell you who it's from. It's Magadol Shebegadolim, that it's better to daven mincha b'yechidut than have a chavruta, than to go to minyan and lose time from your chavruta in learning. You follow? And that's a Litvisha approach. All right, I'll tell you, halacha l'maisa, if you would ask me, I have to say life has given me a lot more than being a Litvisher. You have to keep to a schedule. If you find an excuse not to daven mincha, you're going to find 100 excuses. And the wind-up will be every Monday and Thursday you're not davening mincha. Also, it's important that if you're talking to a Baal Tshuva, and Reb Menashe Klein mentions this as well, you have to stress to him that this is the life cycle of a Jew. and this takes precedence over everything. And it's very important. I know with my grandchildren, many times they've asked me questions about davening b'tzibur, and it takes too long, and they have to catch a bus, or too many people are talking, and they're phonies. And I open up the Rav and I read to them what Rebbe, my wife just said it to one of my grandsons the other day, and he was blown away. He said, all right, this is convincing. Well, the Rav speaks about the importance of davening with the minyan. It's not just you're davening as a yochid, you're davening as part of Klal Yisrael. You're a Jew betoret atzmacha, and you're a Jew betoret amcha Yisrael, kahal Yisrael, adat Yisrael, and all that goes with it. I don't want to repeat the Rav's Torah now. You can find it, I believe it's in volume one of my two volumes on the Rav. All right, now we go a step further away from Menashe Klein, and he opens the Pandora's box, and you're going to see this problem and what has been said about it, and it's something that all of us face in the rabbinate, all of us face in the Israeli army. Time and again, this problem comes up. And I'm talking about Mishnah Halachot Chelik Yud, Siman Tet Vav. This tshuva was written in 1981. It's written to a Rav, and it has to be the way he's describing him, it has to be a Hasidish Rav. It's written to a Hasidish Rav in London. He calls London that Ir Habira, this is London Habira, London to people. I mean, I don't think it applies today, but when I was growing up, sometimes London, you viewed it with more awe than you viewed the Washington, D.C. London, the center of culture, the heart of democracy, the banking center of the world, and he's writing the tshuva to a Jew in London. And what does this Jew ask him? That someone lives in Germany, Deutschland. Now remember, this Jew was written in 1981. And also remember that Rav Menashe Klein is a survivor who went through the hell of the Holocaust. Got it right or wrong, you will know that. He and Eli Wiesel went Buchenwald together, etc. And he's asking him that in London, he has a minyan, and he davens at that minyan. And the minyan consists, some of the daveners, if not the majority, are mechalalei Shabbos. Is that considered a minyan? All right? This question is real. Now, Rabbi Hertz, you don't have this problem today where your rabbi in Queens, the Utopia Parkway Jewish Center, you don't have this problem. But I can tell you that 50, 60 years ago you had this problem right in New York City. I can tell you anyone in the suburbs, Rabbi Rubin, yours truly, oh boy, did we have this problem. A minyan, mechalalei Shabbos.
We don't have the majority, but we always have...
No, but you have... Fine. All right, then you have the problem partially, okay. But this is, all right, now, first of all, we have to understand. I'll give you the source. And you see everything in the tshuva, the halacha, a Jew who is a mechalal Shabbos per pahesia, loses, I would say, basically the status of a Jew. It's mechalal Shabbos per pahesia. Gemara in Chulin, Daf Hei Omer Aleph, where the Gemara says all Jews can be shoychet. Can be shocked. I know that you don't learn Hilchot Shechita. Tarayom, am I right? In the Kollel, did you learn Hilchot Shechita?
The very beginning.
So you do learn. So you know right away in the first Simanim, the Machaber deals with these problems. But the Gemara says, a Jew, any Jew can be a Shechet. Chutz min hamuma linasechet hayayin, ulechalel Shabbatot b'parhesia. Wow. Relax, Yitzchak, relax.
This is not
a halacha. Yitzchak, savlanut, please. This is an open Gemara. You remember the Rav. This is how I did my master's. Remember we got involved? Can a shaita be shaychet? It's in the same siman in the Shulchan Aruch. And the Rav got involved with someone who is schizophrenic. Sometimes normal, sometimes not. And the Rav said, Kaliyachiyav, Samogilena Gresa Machloikis Ibidas. It was once with a great Machloikit. And he spoke about the Cleaves Get for 2 minutes. And out of that 2 minutes, I got my MA thesis. You follow? But now we're talking not Eitam Chalam, Eitam Shaiter. We're talking a Machal Shabbos. Okay, now what does it mean, Menasech Yayin? Menasech Yayin, it means that simply a Jew took wine and worshipped Avodah Zarah with the wine. Like we bring wine to the Beis HaMikdash, he brought the wine to a idol, Shem Yirachem. Now, you think this is unheard of? So let me tell you a little story. B'didi HaViyuvda. I am an eyewitness and an ear witness to this story. When I went, when I was a student in MTA, Yeshiva College, it happened maybe at the end of MTA or at the start of Yeshiva College. There was a whole group in the dorm, and Josh Schneider from West Hempstead was listening to the shiur. Josh's father knew this guy too. I don't mention his name, he's dead already, dead many years, and it's not a complimentary story. This guy had a certain apikusish streak in him. In other words, somehow he wound up in yeshiva, maybe his parents forced him to go, but he was always out to show Chochmat Yisrael, and the rabbis aren't so smart. And one time, believe it or not, he takes a bottle of wine, and they're ready to make Kiddush on it Friday night in the dorm. And he says, you can't make Kiddush on this. I was menasech the wine to Avodah Zarah. So I want to tell you, they went to Rav David Lifshitz on Sunday, and they asked Rav David, and Rav David said, it's impossible. No one believes in Avodah Zarah today. But knowing his personality, he was out to cause you Akmas Nefesh, but you can drink the wine. So don't think it's so distant. But okay, I will agree with you. This is the conservative movement, if you're familiar with their responsum, I should say, on drinking wine. And you all know there's nothing possibly treif about wine. Nothing treif. Wine is wine is wine. The more expensive the wine, you're not allowed to have additives. They're all parts of international laws. The wine when we were kids that we drank, Malaga and Concord, they couldn't pass international standards because they had sugar in it, it was sweet. Today, the wines, Israel wins prizes. Nothing is added. How can wine be treif? Gallo Brothers wine, Welch wine, whoever puts out wine. What can be treif about wine? All right. But there's a gezeira of the Chachamim, you all know, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Stam Yainim, that we should keep our distance from Goyim. If I had power today, I would make a gezeira not in wine, on hard liquor. You follow? Because when you go on a college campus, the kids, wine is children's play, Kinderspiel, but hard liquor, oh boy, and then you get drunk, and the man and the woman, and all that goes with it. You don't have to elaborate, you don't have to act like Madonna in public. Okay, but this gezeira remains a gezeira until today. So if you see the conservative movement, Shubat, I remember this like yesterday, one of the rabbonim on the committee for Jewish law, I think it was called the Committee for Jewish Law, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the rabbis on it, what was it called?
The RA Law Committee.
Yeah, the Rabbinic Assembly Law, but I assume it's called technically committee, but it doesn't matter. The RA, Rabbinic Assembly Committee on Jewish Law. So one of the members had become a chassid of the rabbi. I write about him in Washington, Rabbi Reagan, very impressive figure. And he comes to the Rav and he says, Rebbe, they're going to be mater stam yenem because they claim there's nothing treif about wine. So the Rav calls over Aaron. He says, Aaron, come here, sit down. And I can never. Raiden is sitting here, Aaron Lichtenstein is sitting here. And the Rav is giving footnotes, sources. You know, I was very, little did I know that one day I would know all these sources backwards and forwards, but I was a kid, I was overwhelmed. You know, Kaliyachaya, the Rav is the Tshuv of the Ramah, famous Tshuv of the Ramah. And he says, I want you to go through with Rabbi Reiden all these sources. He should be prepared, know what to say. And he fought, and they wound up with three different opinions, as I recall. one opinion, and they had, that was part of, if three rabbis, there were 21 rabbis on the committee, if three rabbis had one opinion, you're allowed to adopt it. There was never a unilateral opinion, it was always pluralism.
That's a conservative movement.
Yeah, one opinion, you can drink any non-kosher wine, there's nothing treif about it, B'zman Hazeh, as long as it was not used in the church. Second opinion, for sacramental purposes, I'm quoting from the Tshuva, you should use only kosher wine. But outside of sacramental purposes, you can drink any wine. The third opinion was Rabbi Reitman's opinion, Gezeira de Rabbanan, and we have no right to abolish a Gezeira, and you have to use kosher wine. Fine. All right, this is not our problem. People today, everyone drinks kosher wine, and we don't have people with Yayin Nesech. Perhaps Stam Yenam. What do you want to say, Yomo?
Someone recently told me that a professor in YU apparently got into one of the Eastern religions, and she mentioned that she swirls the wine for the gods at her first.
The professor, or she saw the Eastern religion?
No, she does it. She mentioned casually that she does it.
She does it. So, all right, you can't drink her wine, Zangizer, but that's the exception to the rule. I have a different problem. You all know what's going on with Sarah Netanyahu, with the champagne. I'm not worried. So he gave a champagne. Rakef is worried the champagne wasn't kosher. I don't believe kosher champagnes cost that much that you have to take it as a gift. No, she doesn't smoke cigars, only champagne. So it's like, all right, but now let's get into the heart of the matter. Now, what's a machalos Shabbos per Parhesia? You mean he can't shech? Look into Rashi. Hai tana chamira le Shabbos kavodes kachavim. Ta oved ovodes kachavim kofa kosh baruchu. V'machalel Shabbat kofer b'masav u'meid sheka shalosh Shabbat HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'maseh bereishit, and he tells you, look at Simin Bet in Yoredeya. And what this means, of course, is the heart of what Shmirat Shabbos is all about. If you're not a Shem Shabbos, it means you deny the fact that God made the world.
Not
according to
Chazalish. We don't have this.
Yitzchak, relax. If things were up to you, there'd be no shame and shivaj. You just give an answer in one sentence for Gamanu. Now, what does it mean that you deny? See, Avodah Zarah, what does Yayin Nesek mean? Yayin Nesek means Avodah Zarah, that God did not make the world. All right, fine. If when a person says Vayedah Ve'yivoka and he makes Kiddush, that's an acknowledgement that God made the world. If you don't make Kiddush, it means you made your own world. You're here by chance, whatever way it happened. There's no yesterday, there's no tomorrow, there's no accounting for anything. You can do whatever you want. And that's Rashi explaining why this opinion totally knocks out a Machalos Shabbat. And the situation with Machalos Shabbat is, he's not a Jew. Now, here I want to just show you, and I refer you to Rabbi Lichtenstein's first article when he first came upon the scene. We take for granted the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Daled. We take for granted a Jew is a Jew is a Jew. You can't denounce your Judaism, right? You're born a Jew, you're a Jew. In my time in Philadelphia, there were three or four Yudapeish Rabbanim who vied for the title of chief rabbi. I'll never forget Sukkot 1961, the Valesha Rav died, Rav Leza Pupko, well-known name, Pupko. He died, and they interrupted the radio. I'm a newcomer to Philadelphia, I'm listening to the radio, trying to get a feel what this community is about. And they interrupt to say the chief rabbi of Philadelphia has just died. So I said a vort. I mentioned their names too. I could mention three other rabbis who probably had heart failure till they gave the name and they found out that they're still alive. You follow? So this chief rabbi with a long beard and enough. So one of his sons, they all became rabbis, and one of the sons was very thwarted that he was a Kohen. I wish I was making this up, but it really happened. And he was losing the money of funerals. So he had a little convocation of 10 Jews, and he renounced his kahuna, that he's no longer a Kohen, he's just a plain member of the Levi tribe, and he can do funerals. And all right, this is what happened in Philadelphia. Now, a Mechalo Shabbos, according to the Gemara, and you'll see there's endless literature in two modern times, a Mechalo Shabbos, to a certain degree, it means he's renouncing his Judaism. Can you renounce your Judaism? You all say you can't renounce Kahuna, axiomatic. Everyone says you can't renounce Judaism. But I have to tell you, there's a Gemara in Yevamah, Daf Yud Zayin Omid Aleph. The Gemara in Yevamah talks about the 10 lost tribes. And it says in the Gemara, and you can check it out, this is very important, that they became so ignorant of their Judaism and so integrated into the greater general world that they forfeited their Judaism. It's a Gemara in Yevamah, Daf Yud Zayin Omid Aleph. Lo Zazu Misham, you'll see the Gemara. Why did I quote Rav Aaron Lichtenstein? This came to the fore in the State of Israel in the early 60s. Brother Daniel Rifeisen arrives by boat. At that time, you came in Aliyah by boat. I still came in Aliyah by boat. The boat docked in Haifa. It was very moving for me. Last year, when I stayed in Haifa, the year before I was in Haifa, I have three grandchildren in Haifa. We went to visit them. It was very moving for me to see exactly where we got off the boat. I remember like yesterday, it's a traumatic moment in your life. And there it is in Haifa. The guy arrives in Haifa. And just like when we arrived, the Jewish agency had stands set up, tables, desks, and everyone is being processed. So now they're processing Brother Daniel, and here he is with a crucifix, a Jesuit monk, and they ask him, what religion? And he says, I'm Jewish. And the guy says, you can't be Jewish. You're standing there in Midat Salem with a cross. Anyway, he appealed the fact that they refused to write him as a Jew. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the whole question was, here is a Jew, born a Jew. His parents were Shomer Torah Mitzvot. The Holocaust, he was hidden in a monastery. Whatever the story was, like Cardinal Lustiger of Paris. Cardinal Lustiger, a cousin of his, is putting out all the Sfarim on the Rav. Arnold Lustiger, Dr. Arnold Lustiger, fabulous Chumash, the Chumash, three volumes already. All over Yerushalayim, their relatives of the Cardinal, all Shema Torah Mitzvot. No, the Cardinal, what's amazing is he requested at his funeral, they say Kaddish. In addition to the Catholic funeral, he wanted a Jewish funeral as well. So you see, it's a lo pashut. Is he a Jew? Isn't he a Jew? And Rabbi Lichtenstein wrote an article that this man is not a Jew, because when you put on the clothes of a monk and you believe it with a tzelem, it reaches a point where you're no different than the 10 tribes. Lo zazu misham, until they declared them non-Jews. He said, and this man is parishman at Sibor, is no chelik l'olam haba. Alach et kama v'kama, he cannot claim Israeli citizenship as a Jew. I want to tell you, halachically, the greatest tragedy happened afterwards, because the Supreme Court ruled, I think the vote was 5-4, by one vote, they ruled he's not a Jew. So you're going to ask, what's the tragedy, right? What's wrong? The reason they gave. They gave a reason that this is not a halachic state, this is a democratic state, and in a democratic state, you have to decipher concepts by what people think. And if we go out into the street and we ask people, is this monk a Jew? They're going to say no. You know why this was very bad? Because later, when you had that army officer, Shalit, remember, he was a lieutenant colonel, and he brought home his Polish wife, and he demanded her and her children, the children, to be registered as Jews. They speak Hebrew. They're going to serve in the army. They read Hebrew. They write Hebrew. They curse in Hebrew. And the court ruled, yes, it's a democratic country. You judge by what people think on the street. And they ruled Shalit again by, I think it was 5-4. They ruled Shalit that he is, his children are Jewish. And that brought about the whole Mihu Yehudi controversy. And finally, they amended the law that you're only Jewish if born Jewish or if you converted. And it was a great tragedy. They didn't insist that it had to be converted al pi halacha like the Lubavitcher Rebbe wanted. Leaders of the Maftal double talked. I can quote their double talk. It's not important now. I remember Burg saying conversion is a halacha concept. Not to the Supreme Court at that time. Maybe one day when every judge will be from in a Talmud Chacham, but not at that time. And that brought about the problem.
Always been left-wing.
That brought about the problem we have until today of conservative reform conversions. But this is all the whole concept. You're born a Jew, you remain a Jew. The Supreme Court quoted it. There's no way you can lose your Judaism al pi halacha. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, a rose among the myrtle still remains a rose. You follow, you're still a Jew. But you can see from the Gemara in Yevamot, and you see from the Gemara here, a machalo Shabbos, kaifa bi'ika, can shech. So it's not so simple to say a Jew remains a Jew no matter what he does, no matter how he lives. Right? This is the first part of the tshuva, basic. Yoma, what's eating you up?
The Gemara in Yevamot talks about multiple generations.
Yeah, I understand. Yoma, relax. I understand.
Here's one person.
If he's standing there with it, Salem, something tells you this guy has gone too far. Read Reb Aaron Lichtenstein's article. Reb Aaron Halacha Lemaisa, he may still be a Jew, but he doesn't have the right to get Israeli citizenship. He develops it based upon the Gemara Yevamot. But Perseida, Avi, did you want to ask something?
I'm wondering about how that Supreme Court decision affected, or if it did affect, Lange case.
No, the Lange case, nothing. Lange case is a question of Mamzeret. Nothing to do with this. The Lange case. No, the Lange case gets involved. Did he convert or didn't he convert? But that's a question. Did he convert? We don't know. The proof can go either way. So once you have a case of Mamzeret, only of Mamza Vaday lo yavol b'kal Hashem. It's the Gemara at the end in the fourth paragraph of Kedushin. If there's if there's a suffix, then you can start to hit away the Rabbanon, they answer a suffix. But if you can come up with two sveikot, nothing stands in the way. One of the big sveikot that Rav Goren came up with was the fact that he never really had a proper conversion. And as Yitzchak said, that Rav Goren gets a lot of credit, he uncovered the Ministry of Social Welfare in the 1930s in Tel Aviv wrote about this person that he's a Polish guy. They took for granted he's a Polish guy. Also, the rub that was Masada Kedushin for his ex the second time around never asked for a get. He also took for granted that he is a Polish guy. You follow? Okay, but there's a lot more. It's not for now. There's a world of material on the Lange case. Now, let me go one step further. Yitzchak raised a very interesting question. Someone who doesn't make Kiddush, who doesn't observe Shabbat, is he really a kaifer b'ikar, b'zman hazeh? And here we have, unfortunately, a revolution in Jewish life. What do I mean? Before the Enlightenment, 99% of Jews were religious. It doesn't mean they were tzaddikim. I want you to understand me clearly. It doesn't mean there weren't sins. If Jews did not sin, I would be the first one to abolish the Al Chetz on Yom Kippur. Frankly, when I go through those al-chaits, I'm frightened just to think that people could do such things. But unfortunately, humans are humans. There's a famous tshuva of the Noda B'Yehuda, which has been quoted and re-quoted. A whole volume came out now, a doctorate on the Noli Yudha Chatam Sefer by Kahana, Maoz Kahana, I believe his name is, a fabulous doctorate. And he deals with this tshuva as well. But I'll give you one an example of how a human being can form. The Noda Yehuda writes about an individual who he calls a Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham. Halavai the Noda Yehuda would write that about me or you. Wow. And the guy was having an affair with his mother-in-law. And he was living in the house, kest. He was being supported. And not only did he live with the daughter, his wife, he lived with the mother. It's beyond comprehension. And what was the whole shaila? If they have to tell her husband, because if he finds out, he has to divorce her. Asa lebo'alav, asa, asura lebo'alav, asura lebo'alav. Gemara and Sota. The question is, are you chayiv to tell? Do you have edut? Will he believe you? That's not the point. But the point, what I'm saying is, it's not that every Jew is from. I don't want you to walk out of here laughing at me. No, we still had Jews who robbed, who stole, who killed, who seduced, who raped. Unfortunately, these are human beings. And what can I tell you? Just in Yerushalayim, these last months, if you know what's going on, this time it's in the Haredi world, you have exactly the same case. Where a mashgiach in a yeshiva with his nieces, but there's one big difference from that era to this era. Until the Enlightenment, no one changed the Torah. You robbed, you stole, you killed, you seduced, you raped, you did whatever you did. Yom Kippur, you said Slachlanu Avinu Ki Chatanu. You didn't change the Torah. Along comes the Enlightenment, and you start to change the Torah. Sin is not a sin. Man is the center of the universe. God does not count. And you know right now in the Orthodox world, the Torah world, the Yeshiva University world, the neoconservative, which I don't want to use the name they call themselves by because I don't agree, but what you call open Orthodox, I say neoconservative. Just think for one moment. Who would ever dream that people would get up in public and proudly declare, I'm a great-grandson of a great Rav, I don't want to mention the name, but you all know who I'm talking about, a great Rav from Europe, and I'm a homosexual, and have pity on me. I can't help myself. And who would ever dream a Talmud from this Kollel wrote a letter that 200 so-called Orthodox Jews signed on that we have to revise our attitude towards homosexuality? Who would ever dream what's going on today with the transgender world? You understand? Man today, it's not just that he sins. The sin is not a sin. Ah, now you come to that tremendous question. What is a person's mindset? Years ago, 300 years ago, 200 years, 300, 250, a person didn't make Kiddush. It meant, there's no God. Torah is not the Torah. I don't have to worry about it. All right, that's an apikaris. Ishkita is no good. But now, the average person, I'm a Jew like everyone else. Tell me, Bibi Netanyahu, did he daven mincha today? I don't know. I hope so. I don't want to say he didn't. They're chabadnikim sitting here. They'll be angry at me for saying Bibi didn't daven mincha. But you all know the story with Herzl. When Herzl died, I heard the story from the Rav originally. When Herzl died, there was a big machloket. Many rabbanim said you can't eulogize him, and others said no, you have to eulogize Herzl. He did so much for the Jews. So in one shtut, they told the maggid, if you don't eulogize Herzl, we are out. So the maggid got up. The big oilman came, and the maggid. There's a beautiful story, and the maggid gets up and starts and singing. You know, they used to say a eulogy in a sing-song fashion, min zakt mir as bin yodem zev Herzl is an odem gadol. They tell me that bin yodem zev Herzl is a great individual, an odem gadol. Ich kenne, was es an Adam Gottlein oder an Adam Gottel ist. Eben weiß mir das Film von der Wilne Gaun, weil ich gebe mir 1000 Rubel. If they show me the Film of the Wilne Gaun, I'll give 1000 Rubel. Eben weiß mir das Film of the Baal Shem Tov, gebe ich 2000 Rubel. I'll give 2000 Rubel, the Baal Shem Tov. Eben weiß mir das Film von Herzl, gebe ich 100,000 Rubel. If they show me Herzl's Twillin, I give 100,000. But now you have to ask, who is a Jew? Who is a Jew? Just think for a minute. Netanyahu, Peres, famous names. Rabin, Dayan, Golda Meir.
Herzog.
Ben Gurion.
How about Herzog?
Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, the head of the opposition.
The president.
I said the head of the opposition. Yeah. That's his name. He's named after his grandfather. I called him by his correct names. So you see, all right, Herzog makes Kiddush. I can tell you that the Sarah Netanyahu used to drive her sons Friday night to Katamon to hear her father make Kiddush. Her father was the last living Talmud of Rabbi Yisrael Horowitz of Nevada. Used to drive. She went out of her way when he already couldn't walk to make a minyan in the house that he should have a minyan on Shabbos. He should have a minyan with Kriyas HaTeira. He came back to Yiddishkeit, B'lev V'Nefesh. All right. Who is a Jew today? So you see, can you really say today a Mechalel Shabbos is forfeited his Yiddishkeit? He's not a Jew, he's Kaifa B'Yika, the words of Rashi, the words that I asked you. And I have to tell you, a whole literature begins, and you can't believe the implications of this literature. I'll show it to you later today. A whole literature begins in Germany. Reb Yaakov Ettlinger, the Orech Laner on Sanhedrin and other Mesechtot, Shelo to Chevet Binyan Sion. It's Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, an Adam Gadol. If you know Professor Richard Steiner, do anyone know, recognize the name? His brother, Professor Mark Steiner, is married to a great, 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 great granddaughter of the Orech Laner. He already writes, you get all the sources in the Tshuva, that Bizman Hazer, a Mechalel Shabbos, is exactly what Rabbi Rubin described him as, a tinok shenishba. We can't throw these people out. It's not that they're kaifa b'ika. They're raised, go to North Tel Aviv. There's no semblance of Shabbos on the street. I was there for Shabbat, I told you. And yet, Friday night, my Talmud has over 300 people in shul. Down a little bit to the south, is a normal Chabad shtibble. A little bit to the north is a Messianic Chabad shtibble. A little bit more to the north is a multi-million dollar binyan building, Eish HaTorah, on the Mediterranean. So you see, a little bit on the east side, Yakar Synagogue, right? You know what I'm talking about, Yakar? It began in London, Rabbi Copel Rosen's sons, he was a Mira, a Scotsman who wound up in Mir, later flirted with Lubavitch, by the way, and said only the Rebbe knows how to be Makarev people, and he became a Shtikla Chassid, unbelievable, a Litvak who became Mamish in his dress. Rakefid has empathy for Chassidus and understands it, but he's a Litvak. He changed. But his sons, you know, the very, very prominent sons, so there's a branch Yakar in Yerushalayim, that's rabbi, the rabbi there died young, but his son took over, Copel Rosen's grandson. And in Tel Aviv there's a branch, another Rosen is there. It's a brother of the rabbi here in Yerushalayim. And you can't, these people, yeah, Mechalel Shabbos, no question about it. But they lived. Golda Meir wasn't Jewish. I'm also Jewish. Bibi Netanyahu is not Mechalel Shabbos in public, but that's because the position requires it. There's a tradition in Israel that a prime minister is not Mechalel Shabbos in public. There's a tradition that the president is not. If Dafka happens, the president is a Shomer Shabbos. That has nothing to do with tradition. It has to do with his own lifestyle. But we've had presidents, let's say Shazar. Shazar, by the time he became president, was a Chassidish Yid. But there were other presidents, let's say Chaim. Paris was president, was never Mechallel Shabbos in public. That goes with being president. Katzir was never Mechallel Shabbos in public. But it's very hard today to say that these Jews are Chayfa B'Ika. What Rashi is talking about is generations gone by, when everyone is from, it's like today, you see the literature, when a Sakma Chassid throws it away, or a Gera Chassida throws it away, or a Squera Chassida throws it away. You understand, they write books, they're filled with hatred, with enmity, because they were raised in a community which is either or, Untvedor, either this way or that way, there's nothing else. But the average world in which we all live, by the way, willy-nilly, we're all part of that world, live and let live. I have a lot of problems with the new generation today that it doesn't bother them the way it bothers me that their cars on Shabbat. They say, look, we don't drive, but democracy, they're being overrun by Western ideas. Yeah, in democracy, everyone is equal. But we have a different concept. We're individuals, and there's also Am Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, what we spoke about before. And how do you condone Chilul Shabbos? When someone starts their car, it hurts me. It hurts me. What can I say? But all right, the new generation is overwhelmed with Western ideas. Live and let live. Okay, so today, this is the Binyan Tzion. There were more poskim. But then, this ties together, and he says it here, and I'll show it to you again. This ties together now with this very building. Mr. Gris, Joe Gris, Shaul Yosef Gris. We're standing at the entrance to the building. And I had gotten the building from him. This is Liacha Maisa. And we're talking about what the future holds. And he had plans. His plans were beautiful, but they didn't entirely materialize. He viewed here that the greatest Talmidei Chachamim in the world would teach, and the greatest YU students would come in Yerushalayim. It was now Mr. Gris. And he's telling me, you know how I got my name? My father was the Sheikhet for the Shol Umeshiv. I'm named after Rav Shaul Yosef Nachmanson. He was the Rav of Lemberg. Shelet Tshuvot Shaul Meshev. All the poskim in the, not the Litvish world, because they ignore Achronim basically, but any posek, be it in the Ungarish world, the Hungarian world, the Polish world, the Sephardic world, Rav Eshel Shechta quotes the Shaul Meshev as well. And that's who he was named after. Now, Mr. Gris is a perfect study of what we're talking about. Was he always from? In his youth, absolutely. Afterwards, conquered the world. The Rebbetzin Tanya Soloveitchik, brought him back to Yiddishkeit. His brother was always from. His brother was a great devotee of the Rav, Oscar Gris, one of the founders of Maria Synagogue, and every Tuesday night attended the Rav Shehurim. When Joe had a problem, his brother brought him to the Rav, and the Rav said to him, I don't know if I can help you, but I want you to speak to my wife. And Rebbetzin Tanya and Joe Gris hit it off something beautifully. I could go on and tell many stories. It's not for now. But why am I telling you this? Because the Sholom Meshev, Posek Mufak, world famous, was Melamed Zchut on America, that, and he's quoted, De ba'America anashim tisham einu nifsalim al yedei chilul shabbat shalachem mivnei shechim ketinokot shenishpu'u ben ha'akum. He says, the Shaul Meshev reportedly said that these Jews in America, and remember, in the 1800s after the Civil War, before the Civil War, first emigration to America, Sephardim. Second emigration, Germans, Bavarians, Prussians. After the Civil War, even in backwards East Europe, where Jomo comes from, after the Civil War, they heard about, because people followed, they couldn't believe brothers are killing brothers over Obama and over blacks. Cousins are killing cousins. No one can believe it. So it became a topic. People in the Dorf, the Lubavitcher Rebbe spoke about this. Where did they get their news? In the shul courtyard, in the Haif from this shul. And people, what's going on in America? What's happening in America? What's happening in America? And they heard something, they read something. Yeah, it was months later, but they got the news. That made America real. And by the 1870s, the 1880s, wow, hundreds of thousands are coming in. By the early 1900s, millions are coming in. And lo aleinu, you all know what happened. They saw the Statue of Liberty, and there's anecdotal evidence. It's not something that we're making up. Their memoir literature, when they saw the Statue of Liberty, they took that tefillin, threw it into the water, let the fish enjoy it. You don't need tefillin in America. When Harry Fishel arrived in America and he gets off the boat and his cousin greets him, read Harry Fishel's memoir, 40 Years of Struggle for a Principle, I believe it's called. And his cousin tells him, Nemarunta de Yarmulke, the Yarmulke, the kippah, belongs in Europe. It doesn't belong here. And Harry Fishel tells the story. And Harry Fishel himself can't keep a job. He doesn't want to come in Shabbos. They fire him. And then he says he finally made up his mind, he has no choice, because nefesh, he has to work on Shabbos. And he davens at the 6:30 minyan. We've told you many times, every shul had a 6:30 minyan. People went home, made kiddush, changed their clothes and went to work. And he's now walking home from shul, ready to... Nu, do you know the story or not? It's on the Lower East Side. He's walking home from shul, ready to make kiddush, change his clothes, and go to work. And he sees the Jews going to the later minyan, elderly yidden, with long white beards, women with their hair covered, and he sees his mother and father. He believes, he has visions. These people look exactly like my mother and father. How can I be Mechalel Shabbos? And he goes home and vows, he will never be Mechalel Shabbos. And the rest is history, as they say. But if this is the case, then it shows you the Jew in America is a Tinuk Shenishpa. You can't get angry at him. You can't get mad at him. You can't maledict him. You can't say his shkita is not a shkita. You can't say his wine is Yayin Stam Yenim or Yayin Nesach. Nebuch, he's a Tinuk Shenishpa. Very fascinating. I want to tell you it is rumored that the Chafetz Chaim said the same thing. It is rumored. I don't believe it exists in print, but I've seen time and again quoting the Chafetz Chaim that the Jews in America, it's not their fault. And wow, what a concept. And look who's saying it. These are not Schicklinglach. It's not, pardon me, Johnny come latelys like we are, YU graduates, Lubavitch on the map. This is the Shoal Umeshiv. This is, we're talking Reb Yaakov Ettlinger. So Reb Menashe Klein quotes both points of view. And he quotes Reb Moshe, but I'll quote Reb Moshe from Reb Moshe in a minute. He quotes Reb Moshe, so he tells him, do as Reb Moshe says, perhaps you can count them, but it's a delicate question. What's beautiful about the tshuva, he admits at the end, Herichu b'zeh achronim, oman ein ani yachol lefsot b'zeh, rak mara makom ani lo masha katfu b'zeh achronim. He says, I don't want to paskin. It's machleitis achronim, I gave you the sources. You do what you can and try your best to influence the people in Germany, and halavai, I shouldn't get questions like this. But then Remember, I told you, who's writing this tshuva? Reb Menashe Klein, graduate of Buchenwald, survived with miracles, bosom buddy of Eli Wiesel, zichrono livracha. At the end of the tshuva, he can't help himself. And he says, the truth is, I can't understand how any from Jew can live in Germany. We have so many countries filled with from Jews, succeeding as from Jews. Mal Yisrael Shomer HaTorah Beveik HaKfarat B'medina Ha'arura Hazu. V'yu Kol Yomav Shabbat Yom Tov V'chol Ben Shcheinim Ka'ela. And you have to admit, wow. In my humble opinion, the Mishnah Halachat, 100% right. But take a look how many Jews live in Germany today. Take a look how many Russians live in Germany. Take a look what Chabad is doing in Germany. Take a look at the Yom HaBar Smecha, his own grandson, is the Shaluach, what is it, in Frankfurt, I believe, Berlin. Where was the latest bombing? It was in Berlin. He was the Shluch to Berlin then. He was interviewed. And this comes back to the old, difficult question that I have been challenged with time and again. I see myself sitting in the Mossad, in the Russian office, and after we finish the serious business, some of the lifelong Mossadnikim, people who devoted their life, to helping the Jewish people survive. And they say to me, how can Jews remain in New York? We're here, Israel's on the map. It's not like the Russian Jews. Don't have freedom of choice. They have freedom. And this is the delicate question. And as a Zionist with all my limbs, I say, look, have to be a realist. Not everyone can come an aliyah. They're just not on that level of greatness. But wherever they're Jews, we have to reach out to them. Because the more Jews we create, ultimately it's more aliyah. You follow? I always say the vote that America gives us, it's Trumat Maisrat. Like, we don't have everyone, but who we do get from America, top quality. Trumat Maisrat Lalot Atzabarina. So it's a very delicate question, and I certainly am the biggest Zionist sitting in this room. I'm here longer than anyone else, 48 years, and I understand we're not going to give up on the Jews in Hillcrest, and the Jews in Brooklyn, and the Jews in Berlin today, as much as it hurts. And there's a Jew sitting here in this class who benefits from the fact that there's outreach in Berlin. Am I right or wrong, Avraham?
That's my wife.
I know, I'm saying your wife, that's what I'm talking about. Baruch Hashem, I said you benefited. I hope she benefited from you. I mean, okay, I'll have to ask her. He just got married, and they made the shidduch unbelievable. Menashemayim Zikunu. He's from Moscow, although he's a Bukharin, right? But he's raised in Moscow. And what are her roots?
Washington.
Where? From where?
Briansk
is Rav Shimon Shkop was Reverend Briansk. There was once a yeshiva in Briansk before Grodno. To find out if she's related to Rav Shimon Shkop. Well, you know, you married a cousin of Rav Shimon Shkop. Okay. Look at my year, because I found it out 44 years after I should have known about it. I wouldn't have been, you know what I'm saying? Rabbi Revel, my cousin. Okay. So you find out. You can never tell. Gentlemen, let us go a drop further. Fascinating question. Fascinating tshuva. He also cites the Melamed Lahoil. Now, the Melamed Lahoil, Reb David Tzvi Hoffman, this is I would require anyone getting smicha from YU to pass an exam on the Shedet Tshuvat Melamed Lehoyel. Why do I say that? Because the questions he got are exactly the questions we still get today as Rabbanim. He was the posek of German Orthodoxy, the latter part of the 19th century into the 20th century. He died in 1921. The Melamed Lehoyel was a gon adir. I mean, people who go through his writings, are just it's overwhelming how one man could know so much. And he was Hungarian, well, influenced by Rav Hirsch, Germany, Hildesheimer, and Kol Raz Lo Anislay. There was nothing he didn't know. Shasim Paiskim, Shelet Shuvat, Bible, Biblical Criticism, Pashanut HaMikra, ancient languages, Medrash. He was similar to Rav Chaim Heller. If you think of Rav Chaim Heller, Rav David Zvi Hoffman was a little bit more German, a little bit more westernized. But he was a photo image of Rav Chaim Heller. He winds up in Germany. He dies in 1921. And he left over notebooks where he paskin she'ilot and wrote the answers. His children published the notes. Now, it was republished. I have here a photograph from my own library. I have the second edition, which came out in New York in 1954. What's also fascinating is he's very easy to understand. Why? Because these tshuvot were not prepared for publication. It was notes, quick answers with basic sources. He doesn't go into any lengthy tshuva. He gives you one, two, three. This is what I decided. Within the tshuvot, there is a world of contemporary civilization that is reflected. And when you read it, you recognize that America is not any different than Germany 100 years ago. In America, they went further. I don't think anyone in his right mind ever dreamt that they would claim homosexuality as an ideal, and it's fine, and it's good, and it's normative. I remember the Rav getting hysterical in the early 70s when someone suggested that they can't control themselves, they can't contain themselves. I remember the Rav, and oh, wow, who could ever believe it? Who could ever believe a world would come when teenagers are having sexual relations, high school sell condoms? I mean, it's beyond words. It's beyond words. There's no God. There's no holiness. There's no sanctity. There's no concept of love, of what man and woman. And then you see divorce rates, 50%, 60%, Daimler Dover self. Okay. It's Melamed Lehoyel, I'm quoting. This is the Sefer, by the way, which came up with the Kohen to the Gioret. Everyone in Israel knows the Sefer was on the front page of Maariv in the 70s. There was a big machleket here from a kibbutz, an irreligious kibbutz, and this woman was converted by a Reform rabbi. She was living with the Kohen. So they didn't recognize it. So Moshe Dayan went crazy, and they started pressure, and it has to be recognized. If not, we're going to allow Reform rabbis in. Who needs these Orthodox? Don't recognize it's a valid marriage, and all that goes with it. So Rav Gorin converted the woman, and then the big question remains, how can you convert a woman to marry a Kohen if we all know the Gemara in Bechorot, Aflamid, that if you magaya someone and they say, chutz midas, one thing I'm not accepting, the conversion is not good. We'll talk about this yet. It's an interesting question. So everyone came up with the Melamed Lehoyel. With the Melamed Lehoyel wrote a tshuva and a similar question. The girl was under three when she converted, and it's going to be a chilul Hashem. So he came up, all right, to convert her, but not to do chuppah v'kedushin, to do a civil marriage, and that's less of an isa. The Rambam, you'll see. So that Melamed Lehoyel, everyone was talking about. So let me tell you, Reb Moshe was asked the question, and they quoted the Melamed Lehoyel to him, and he said, it can't be. I don't have the Sefer. I've never seen it. And the amazing thing was all Reb Moshe had to do was to tell his son, Reb David Feinstein, who had lunch every day in 33 Canal Street, which is Otzar Sfarim, around the corner from MTJ. That was East Broadway, Canal Street, a half street up. Go around the corner. Tell your son to ask Yankel Goldman, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, lend me a copy of the Melamed Tehoil. But a Litvish mind, the Rav was asked the same thing. It's on in the Yachay Kala, and you can hear it on tape. And someone throws at the Rav the Melamed Tehoil, and the Rav says, Das Kenish sign, it's impossible. You follow? It's a Litvish approach. But the Melamed Tehoil never, what he suffered, what he went through, you'll see, it's exactly a description of what we have today. Now, I'm quoting the Melamed Tehoil, She'elah Chaf Tet. And listen to the question. In our minyan, we have one or two that are Mechalalim Shavas Beprechesia. Lovak B'malachtam, Ki'im Gam Osim Mugmar. V'afilu kiddush v'havdala einam osim isharu letzafam l'minyan. Wow, what a question. In other words, first of all, people go to business Shabbos. All right, I grew up in a world everyone worked Shabbos half a day. Everyone. I told you when Mr. Weinstein, Zichrono Levracha, we lived in a very big building, the back of the building, the front of the building. He lived in the front of the building, maybe 75 families. Six stories, every story, I don't know, four here, four there, eight times six, big building, 2115 Washington Avenue. So when he came home from work on Shabbos, he made Kiddush, had lunch, and I would go over and ask him all my questions in Gemara. I started Gemara, fifth grade, elementary school. My father couldn't help me with Gemara, but Mr. Weinstein knew how to learn. That was America. Every work, no, they work. They don't have a choice. Panasa, it's not Chilul Shabbos. They don't want to rebel. They have no choice. Danu sim b'tnei hadibura, tinokat shenishbu, the American scene. And then also, what depends on the work. Some work is not even Chilul Shabbos. It's only the Rabbanan. The money is at the Rabbanan, the Kenyan, all that. To say there as a store. Answering the telephone was a whole machlokes, the oraita, the rabbanan, etc. All right, but there were people in Germany, not just their stores, they smoked on Shabbos. That's what it means. Did anyone understand? Look at the words, osim mugma. You gotta be. You have to know what that meant in rabbinic Hebrew. Mugmar is incense, spices. Osim mugmar. No, that you have to do on Shabbos. That's Chilul Shabbos b'Parhesia. Can you count them for the minyan? And he tells the story and he quotes endless German rabbanim, Talmidei Chachamim. Shemachalalei Shabbos bizmanenu kol zman shelo hiyitu aleichem bifneihem ubifnei habeitin shechilalu bifnei yud Yisrael ein osrim yayin b'magam. He says bizman hazeh, unless you pull them into beitin and you warn them, you can't be machalal Shabbos. Then maybe you can't count them. But if they're just like every other Jew, you can consider them Jewish, you can count them for the minyan.
And this source is the one that Rav Moshe and the Rav had?
They never saw it. They didn't. No. I was talking about the coin to the Giorit.
Oh. Okay.
No, this Jewah the Rav would agree with. Rav Moshe will say. But the Rav would agree. Halacha l'maisa, the Rav would agree. Okay. And he says that Bizman Chazeh, this is the Melamed Lohil giving Eidat Nemana. Watch what he's going to say here. This is Mamish not just in theory, this is in practice. He says, people count Mechalalei Shabbos in Hungary, certainly in Germany. Nudi, you pick that up, what he's saying? Hungary was Chatam Sofer. Hungary was much firmer than Germany. All right, there was an ovation in Hungary, the Neolog. But the Neolog was mild compared to Germany. Neolog would be what we call, in my time, conservative. It was basically mixed seeding, but everything else was firmer.
Pressburg was in Hungary at the time,
Sofer's time? Pressburg was in Hungary, absolutely. And in Hungary, where you had the real from Jews, Chadash, Asumene Torah, anything that was forbidden. And there they counted a Machalos Shabbos. Alacha, Kamer in Germany, where you had a hunt to find a Shomer Shabbos. And he tells the following story. This is Rav David Zvi Hoffman speaking. V'zichroni, I recall, Shepam achat ira avelet li'ish echad, Shechanuto patuach b'shabbat, V'hu echad mi'bale batam shkilateinu, Kahal adat Yisrael. This was the biggest shul in Germany, Adat Yisrael, Berlin. It's the cream, the cream on top of the cake. This is the icing on the cake. And this Jew, Mechalel Shabbos, was an avelet for his parents. V'yarad lifnei hateva beveit ha-knesset kilateinu. And people started murmuring, how do you allow Mechalel Shabbos? So the Gabbai spoke to him. He's describing it. Lafayez him, make him feel good, but told him that, look, it's, people are complaining that you're daven for the Yomid, you're not a Shomer Shabbos, you shouldn't do it again. Mipnei shehakahal yiranenu al zeh. They're going to gossip. The big, beautiful shoe. No? You know the history of the young Israels in America? 95% of young Israels were formed because a person had yahrzeit and they didn't let him daven, didn't give him maftah, didn't give him shlishi, didn't give him shishi. They walked down the block and opened a new shul. You know what happened? He describes it. It's fabulous. It's like a movie. You have big Adat Yisrael. Half a block away, there was a shtibble. A shtibble. Chevra Shas. And he describes the Gabbai there was an ish chareid v'yorei Elokim. The Gabbai was legitimate. We're not talking now neoconservative. From maybe Hungarian, maybe Chatam Sofer. And the Gabbai let him daven, didn't stop him. In the shtibble. Yarad lifnei ha-teva. And Reb David Zvi Hoffman said, he asked the Gabbai, why didn't you stop him? In my shul, in the big shul, people were murmuring, we didn't let him daven again. And in your shul, from shul, a shtibble, why didn't you stop him? And he said, in our shtibble, it's already from generations gone by, we allow Mechalel Shabbos, whose stores are open on Shabbos, we allow them to daven for the Amid. And the Rabbanim in our shul, among them world famous Talmidei Chachamim, Lo Michu, didn't make a protest. And the Gabbai tells Rav David Zvi Hoffman, they were samach on the Binyan Sion that we quoted before, Rav Yaakov Etlinger. It's Simon Chof Gimel, Binyan Sion Chadashat. I've seen it. It's a fabulous tshuva. Shemachalal Shabbos bezmanenu nechshavim ketinok shenishba levein ha-nachrim. Wow. And look what he says. This is the description of America. It's the description of Israel, which Baruch Hashem is changing slowly but surely. And what's the description? Shebamanatenu harabim, the majority of Jews in our land, Germany, are Mechalalei Shabbos. It's not that they deny that God exists, but this is their religious experience. They daven for the Amid, they come to shul, their stores are open Shabbos, and they're not doing it out of enmity or hatred.
What year did this take place?
The tshuva, we don't have a year on it, but I would imagine an educated guess, 1880, the 1880s. And here, this is what Menashe Klein quotes, that he quotes that Harav Malatu Kvodom Mishulim Zalman Hakoin B'Shem Hagom Bal Sholim Meshiv. He quotes the Sholom Meshiv Shenashim B'America Einam Nifsalim Al Yedei Chilul Shabbat, because they are Tinokot Shenishpo. And he goes on and on. He quotes the Tshuva Rabbi Akivega with someone shaving with a razor. It's a famous tshuva. You can't disqualify them because everyone shaves with a razor. They think it's permissible. To them, they look at you. You don't shave with a razor. They look at it like a chumrah. They look at it like you have a choice. It's the mentality of the people. And therefore, the Lama Lahoyal says, if these people come to shul, you can depend upon the lenient opinions and count them for a minion. You can let them daven. You can call them to the Torah. However, with all that he says lahakel, and all that he's melamed skut, and here he says something that you cry when you read it, but it's so true. It's what I alluded to before. He says at one time, the majority of Jews were Shomer Shabbos. Then you could say he's a Mechalel Shabbos. Today, it's exactly the opposite. Bavanotenu harabim, rubam partsim hageda. And it is the frum Jews that are considered the minority. And it works out today that the Chilul Shabbos is b'parchesia, and the Shmirat Shabbos is Betzina. It's just the opposite today. And boy, hits the nail on the head with that description. Yes, Jonathan?
Would there be a difference between an Aliyah during the week and on Shabbos if he's a Mechalel Shabbos?
Psychologically, what you're saying seems correct, but we'll come to that in Reb Moshe with the whole concept of the Aliyah have to be on. Say that, you see, if you view that he's not a Jew anymore, then there's no difference. But if you view with the Tinuk Shenishpa, then absolutely, your reasoning is absolutely correct. But I have to tell you, in the Tshuva, you have to understand, it hurt Reb David Zvi Hoffman that a person, you're in a shul, that's like I told you, I was in that big shul in Connecticut, and I described to you the second minyan, the first minyan, the Ashkenazi minyan, is like a young Israel. The second minyan is an Orthodox shul, and this bar mitzvah boy is davening fadiyomet, beautiful davening, leans the Torah, gives a drasha, famous name, I recognize the name right away, who his great uncle was, first biographer of Theodore Herzl. And then the kid, after davening, I see they're driving away. And I asked the rabbi said, look, the previous rabbi who really built the shul was there for over 40 years, 50 years, he permitted it, and it's nothing I can do. But it leaves you with a very, very awkward feeling. And he's a nice kid. Halavai, the kid will spend a gap year here, as they call it, and maybe a rebbe will turn him on to Torat Hashem Tamima. That's what a rebbe has to accomplish. But he tells the person who asked the question, if you can leave the shul without machloiket and find another shul where Mechalel Shabbos will not be davening, etc., called for the Yomid I'm talking about, better to do that than to depend upon me. Yiddish word, I'll teach you a knapper heter. You know what the word knapper, Yitzchak in Yiddish? Knapper. A week. How would you say it in English? I don't even know. A knapper heter. A week. A week doesn't sound the same. A knapper heter. Better you should do that if you can do it without machloket. Okay. So now you have you have the Menashe Klein, you have the Melamed Lahoyel. Now we're coming into the big leagues, and Reb Moshe Feinstein. We won't finish it today because I'm going to show you the implications. But these Tshuva of Reb Moshe have powerful, endless implications for the state of Israel in the year 2018. It's unbelievable. Powerful implications. But before I begin, Reb Moshe, I want to tell you a true story that explains it all. B'didi Haviyofta. I've lived in the same building for 48 years now. Actually, we bought it 48 years ago, the apartment, but I'm in maybe 47 plus years, and I was in the absorption center for, we first moved in Pesach. We've had a lot of neighbors. One apartment is owned by a Hegdish. There are two apartments actually today owned by a Hegdish. You know what that word means? The apartment was owned by a man who lived on the west side, bought an apartment in Israel after the Six-Day War, furnished it, sent over from America. I remember a whole shipment came in, furnished it. Today, you know, after today, you can buy everything here, but it was a different era then. And before he could come, he died, childless, never married. A Yid, good Jew, Baal Tzedaka, he willed the apartment to Hebron Yeshiva. Hebron Yeshiva owns that apartment until today. And they rent it out, they get a good rental, it's a good neighborhood and a nice building. During the years, one of the great Rabbanim of the world, Rabbi Yalev Grusnavs, the Leib Aryeh, he's a mechutin with the Hebron, with the man who runs it, Reb Yitzchak Hebroni. He's no longer alive. These people are no longer alive. But he was one of the children of going back to Reb Moshe Mordechai, and Reb Moshe Mordechai's son-in-law, Rav Hebroni, and he was a son. So he wasn't a lamdan. He was a money man. And he ran the apartment, would rent it out. So he rented the apartment to his mechutin, Rabbi Yalev Grusnes. Rabbi Yalev Grusnes, if you don't recognize the name, the Leib Aryeh, if you're familiar with Reb Moshe Feinstein's Tshuvot, there's no one in Reb Moshe Feinstein's Tshuvot who gets more titles than Rabbi Yalev Grusnes. He was a Litvisher Gaon who became Av Beitin of the United Synagogue Beitin in London, and was a real terrific Talmud Chacham. You have to look at his Sfarim. And an absolute gentleman, master of the Queen's English, very interesting personality. His wife, when you looked at her, you thought she was Tamar Rebetzin with a shaitel. Rumor had it that she wrote detective stories under a pseudonym so that they shouldn't identify that. It's like the Rosh Hashiva's wife in Hebron today has a doctorate from Hebrew U, Esther Farbstein. But no one will ever know. Her doctorate is never mentioned. And when you read her doctorate, the famous book, the Holocaust book, brilliant piece, it's been translated into English as well. So she thanks all the professors, but there's not one word that this was her doctorate. Okay? The Gera Rebbe's wife, the Penei Menachem, his wife had a doctorate in English literature from Hebrew. When I was introduced to her, I was blown away by my silly Bronx English and her majestic Queen's English. So you got to understand Rabbi Leib Grusnes. And he came in Aliyah. I was a man in his 60s, had retired from London, and I had the privilege of talking with him and learning almost every day. He was my neighbor. We were quite close. I had wonderful neighbors. He was, you know, very sincere, but I'll use the word very naive. And everything we're talking about, the Chilul Shabbos, Tinuk Shenishpa, this is what I saw with my own eyes. Oel Rivka has had two minyanim since time immemorial, the 6:30 Shabbos minyan and the 8:15 Shabbos minyan. Now there's a third minyan. If the founders of the shul knew that this was going on, they would bomb the shul, but they're no longer alive. There's a Chabad minyan that begins, I think, at 10 o'clock. When does Chabad begin, Natan?
9:30 or 10.
9:30 or 10, maybe 9:30 they begin. All I know is when I come in for Mincha, They're first finishing the Fabrengen, okay? They're on the side in the Shtibel. So they're two minyanim. Now, yours truly has always davened at the first minyans for 48 years. I'm a regular at the 6:30 minyan. I have to give credit to that minyan. I'm going through Shas a third time. I'll say there's nothing to do with my lectures, Shayurim, preparation. A Jew has to know Shas, das heißt Ayid. So I'm going, that's only because I daven at 6:30, get home, I kiddush at 8:10, whatever, and wake up Malkus, she goes to her shul, and the kids will see home, they went to their shul, everyone went to daven, and I could learn, no phone, no interruptions. I get a jump on the week, everyone knows that expression, my wife, my children, my grandchildren, I hope my great-grandchildren will learn it. A Saba has to get a jump on the week in his learning. Okay, good. So the minyan, Rabbi Grusnes, Rabbi Yalev, davened at the second minyan. Now, in the building, there was another family. A family, let me not mention their name, although facts are facts. The lady of the house was the great-granddaughter of Rabbi Yehoshua Leib Diskin, Rabba Shel Brisk, Rabba Shel Yerushalayim, great-granddaughter. Her husband was a judge. Their hatred for Yiddishkeit was indescribable. Indescribable. The Shabbos elevator, I was responsible for until 2 years ago when Professor Kami Horowitz moved into the building. He took over, though I still turn it off and turn it on. He would turn off the Shabbos elevator. Be angry on Shavuot that was on too early. 1 year Shavuot, I took talcum powder and poured it on the switch that governed the time clock of the elevator so he should think it's the police, that there'll be fingerprints. He didn't turn it off that year. Baruch Hashem. The enmity, the hatred. Shem Yerachem. So here are their two little children playing with chalk outside the building. One of them later becomes an attempted murderer, goes to jail. Well, you raise children without, what do you want? She was in the army, didn't like him a facade. We were on the front page of every newspaper. Rehov Rabchaim Berlin 18. She proved, they got good lawyers, that the poison was not enough to kill him, just to harm his stomach. So she only got 5 years in jail instead of life. She's someplace in England today, they tell me, a lawyer. Shem Yerachem. Every word I'm telling you is absolutely true. Aaron Rekefet does not tell a fib in Yerushalayim on a Sunday when his good friend Eli Rothkopf is sitting in front of him. Okay? So Rabbi Yalev Grusnes comes home from shul and the kids are playing with the chalk and he bends down. I just walked out of the building maybe to wait for Malka or whatever, and with my own ears I hear him saying in his broken Hebrew, you understand? Yiladim, Hayom Shabbos, Asulis Achek im Gir. And these kids look up at him and said, Lo, Lona Muta, Anachnu Lo Datiyim, Anachnu Chiloniyim. With that answer, these kids are giving you the whole secret of Tinok Shenishba. Don't forget this. This will become paramount, not just in the question of counting to me. That's a minor question. The entire question of Geirut, this Man Hazeh, which eats us up alive in this country. We have 350,000 non-Jews who consider themselves Jews, acts like Jews, taken for Jews, and they don't want to convert. Can we convert them? Can we cajole them? What does conversion mean? Who is a Jew? What is a Jew? Pluralism, democracy. These kids are geniuses. You're Dati, you're Haredi. You have a beard. You wear black clothes. You can't play with chalk on Shabbos. We go to Paula Ben Gurion. We speak perfect Hebrew. We're going to serve in the army. We're going to try to kill our mafakeid in the army. We can write on Shabbos. Powerful little story. It's exactly what we're talking about. The Binyan Sion, the Melamed Lahoil, and we're going to see with Reb Moshe. And I want to tell you in advance, this is the only topic. I once gave a shiur in Brooklyn, and some of the big rabbanim, they kissed me, and because I articulated, one of them said, I always felt something, but I could never articulate it. It's the only topic, by the way, that I think Reb Moshe ever changed his mind. Because Reb Moshe is solid like a rock, and he never changed his mind. He doesn't budge. As much as the Satmar beat the heck out of him, and you'll see the implications of this in my Monday class. Wait till we reach it with Rav Hutner. It'll blow your mind what I've uncovered, and I believe it to be true. But Reb Moshe stood firm. The topic of Geirut, very fascinating. You go by the years, because Reb Moshe gives years, and you see there's a thought development. And this story is classic. Now, I want to read one more postscript. I have to have respect for my students. Natan, you'll tell this to Alex, please. Yomo, to Alex as well. Years later, I find myself Shabbat in Manhattan, scholar in residence in the most prestigious synagogue outside of Israel in the entire world. KJ, Kehillat Yeshurun, and I don't want to offend Rabbi Hertz, the Jewish center, but KJ is still KJ, we gotta be honest. Who would ever dream that the President of the United States would be connected with Kehillat Yeshurun? And people are coming over and thanking me for my talk. And this woman with little children, from children, Rama's children, comes over to me. Rabbi Rakefet, and she has a slight accent. I think you know my sister. And I look at her, and she tells me, isn't my sister your neighbor? And she gives me the name. On the spot, I faint. When they revive me, I say, you're from, you're observant. What happened here? You know your sister. You know your brother-in-law. And she tells me, she wound up in America in graduate school, met her husband from Mexico. He's an MD, he's not alive anymore. They tell me he's a world-class doctor. Chabad picked them up on campus. Need I say more? So, Aaron Rakefet, born and bred Litvak, wishes to summarize. Before I do, let me tell you in advance, tomorrow's a very special day. The classroom will be a studio. I've had to arrange it, you know, what's going on here, because there's a new God coming in tomorrow. So with all that a new God has to learn, the crew is going to come in about 8:15 to set up the room. We have to get them in, and then there'll be some outsiders coming. Why is the classroom becoming a studio? Rabbi Beryl Wein, Destiny Foundation, is putting out more movies, more documentaries. He's now working on the 1920s. His Unterführer, I don't know how to say that in English, but let's say his assistant, how would you say?
Second
in command. Unterführer, all right. Second in command happens to be my dear student, Rabbi Dr. Nachum Amsel. And he was in the first Kovel class. His wife is my student. His wife's parents are my students. His wife's brother is my student. So Normie drives me, you know, up the wall. They wanted me to give lectures. I said, look, I don't have the energy. My energy is in the Kollel, Sunday, Monday. You know what I'm doing. I'm teaching myself. So we made a compromise, and tomorrow's lecture is not part of the Rabbi Huttner series, but it's a very important, honest, basic lecture. You're not going to get it in Art Scroll. It is called The Roaring Twenties, The Seeds That Germinate into Yeshiva University. Everyone is invited. It's normal time. You can bring your wives, whoever, the more the merrier. I hope we'll have enough seating here, but knowing the kollel of this year, we'll have more than enough. What did we do today? Baruch Hashem, we dealt with a new problem, not about interrupting and forgetting about davening, but can you count the Machalos Shabbos for a minyan? Can you give a Machalos Shabbos an aliyah? Can a Machalos Shabbos daven? And you saw a world of literature, the Mishnah Halacha, the Melamed Lahoil, the Shol Umesha being quoted, and this is Halacha L'maisa. Whether we like it or not, this is the reality today. Particularly outside of Israel, the religious Jew is the minority. I know there's a Lakewood, there's a Borough Park, but when it's all said and done, you saw that even with the inauguration, Jews went into cars on Shabbos, not just non-frum, but frum, ala heterim. The whole atmosphere is against us. In Israel, it's a lot better, I should say. You have over 2 million Shomer Shabbos Jews. You have over 4 million Shomer Shabbos and Mesoratim, maybe even over 5 million. So here it's a little bit better, and the halacha may have a different range here. But this problem haunts us. But I've set the stage, beginning with the Mishnah Halachot, we've set the stage for Reb Moshe Feinstein, which becomes critically important in what is facing us here. Now, in 2 minutes, we're going to daven Maariv. I just want to give out some freebies. This passed to Yitzchak. This is very interesting. If anyone is interested, this is J.J. Schachter, gave a lecture in Lindenbaum's on women and the study of Torah. And I've given shirim like this years and years ago. It's not the, here are all the sources. This is from the Rabbi Huttner class, Hillel Gerberg's article. That's for you, Yitzchak. This is for Alex. This is, yeah, this is Mayinotecha. Chabad, high class. I apologize, it's in Matan Hebrew, but if you don't learn Matan Hebrew, you're out of the beach. You're off the main path of Torah and Jews today. This is what I'm talking about and eating my heart out. Women's ordination, it's a matter of decency. This is totally against Torah. This is the Western world conquering Torah. We have to be like Chabad, Shaluach Shlucha, Rakefetz Innovation, R-A-S-A, Rabbinic Advisor, Spiritual Advisor.
By the way, Rebbe, I have in the lecture I gave last year here in the Kollel, titled, Illuminating the Darkness of Greek Wisdom,
right.
Soloveitchik, Torah, True Torah, Omada, and the Future of YU. I have a whole program outline of an alternative thing that we should have created decades ago.
So do me a favor, show it to me. The rise of intermarriage in the modern Orthodox MO community. If this is true, we are in trouble. I couldn't believe my eyes. Conversion, not bar mitzvah for non-Jews. This is part of the very problem we're going to touch upon next week with Reb Moshe Feinstein. This is Yanklovich. U.S. Rabbi writes prayer to avoid blessing Trump. It's beyond my what can I say? All right, I guess there have to be different types of people in the world to keep us normal. If anyone's interested, this is a masterpiece by Rav Eli Sadan. Exactly what I'm talking about, but in Israeli context. How to remain good Torah Jews and not allow the chiloniyut of the Western world to overwhelm you. And Eli Sadan is a man of great achievement. And finally, a collector's item, a beautiful booklet of Gedolei Yisrael, against computers, iPads, and it tells you not to throw it away. I don't know why. There's not one word of Torah in here, unless they've reached the point that pictures of Rabbanim also need Geniza. I hope I'm wrong. I want to thank my dear students. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming, making me young again. I get younger tomorrow, and Tuesday I'll start to regain the years. I mentioned my new great-grandson, Uri Eisen. He should have arichut yamim tovim. His parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents should have lots of nachat, and you from yours. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Yitzchak, do me a favor. See if anyone here needs a lift from the outsiders. You get, take them to a bus on your way home. You know what I'm saying? Take them back to civilization. We're going to dab my right now. I just want to say, until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Michael, you want to give us a hurrah?